Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. It is 2:05. Joining me, Senator Menard, Senator Giesel, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. Senator Pascban will be joining us shortly, and Senator Davis is in another meeting as well. We did have Senate Bill 87 scheduled as item number one. However, we're going to hold that with acceptance of the committee until Senator Pascban gets here. So we will hear two new bills first, if that's okay. First, Senate Bill 65, ADA Procurement Projects, and Ted Leonard. Ted, would you like to come forward? Also, Mark Davis. I guess you can join Mr. Leonard, and then we can just go like crazy.
Okay.
Mr. Leonard, Mr. Davis, you know the rule. You know the routine.
To the chair, for the record, my name is Ted Leonard. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority.
For the record, my name is Mark Davis, and I'm also with ADA.
Quickly, we'd like to thank the chair and the committee for allowing us the opportunity to present Senate Bill 65. This bill is in a series of bills that we have worked with the Senate and the House on to continue to update ADA's ability to help the economy of Alaska grow and to more effectively promote job growth. Specifically, House Senate Bill 65 would actually do three things. The first is that it would amend the procurement code to empower ADA to adopt regulations to govern its own procurement process. This would be giving ADA powers similar to what Alaska Housing has and other corporations. Under this amendment, ADA would still have to use competitive bidding principles that are used throughout the state procurement code. It would still have to provide vendors reasonable and equitable opportunities to participate in the procurement process. And we believe that by allowing ADA this ability, it would be able to be more effective with the private sector as it developed projects, which is our main process through our procurement code. So it's, in our belief, the state procurement code was designed for a certain purpose, and ADA is a little off-center of that based on the fact that we are working with the private sector hand-in-hand to develop projects. The second section would enable ADA to invest directly into a limited liability corporation or a corporation for the purpose of owning or participating in the development and ownership of a project. It could only be for the project. It couldn't be a corporation that ADA could do many things. It would be a specific purpose entity that could only be used to own that project. Last year, through this committee, ADA passed legislation through its project development section of its code that allowed us the ability to participate in a portion or in a project by owning just a share or a portion of the project. As we started going through that process, we found out that the most effective vehicle that the private sector likes to use is a specific purpose limited liability corporation or a corporation. And since that's not specifically allowed in the statute, ADA can't use that vehicle to provide that type of ownership model. And the third section, 3 through 5, would update and expand the types of development projects for which ADA can be in. As we went through our strategic plan several years ago, we identified about 7 or 8 targets or economic sectors that we believe that ADA could help through investing in economic infrastructure. And with our code currently and the definitions, it's really targeted right now ADA's project definitions to tourism, energy, natural resources, and industrial manufacturing. So this would expand those definitions that would ensure that we could actually help the economy sectors such as communications, healthcare, logistics, and, example, also assist in ensuring healthy federal presence in Alaska. As we all know, when we're talking about that three-legged stool, the federal presence in Alaska is a important part of our economy, and we believe that ADA may be able to assist in certain times with helping develop facilities for that. So those are the sections, and I have my economic development officer here that could answer any questions about the bill. And
great. Thanks, Mr. Leonard, for running through the sectional analysis. And Mr. Davis, you're here to further. Would you want to testify further on?
Well, the only thing I'd add is that the things we wanted to add actually were based on, as Mr. Davis for the record, things that actually happened. For example, we wanted to add federal facilities, and that's because we actually had an approach by a federal agency that wanted ADA to construct, finance, and then lease back to the federal agency facility, when that would support the bases in the military in Alaska, which is a large part of our economy. And unfortunately, the Department of Law, just looking at our statute, said we're not authorized to do that. So some of what you see in this bill are actually attempts to just change the law to modernize what we're doing, and just because law is correct, of course, that we're not authorized to do them. So we're just out of date. So we can't do communications. We can't do health care, which is a major part of our economy. We can't support the military. So that's really the genesis of a third of this bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Davis. And we have been joined by Senator Betty Davis. Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Menard, for the record. Of course, whenever we increase your ability to go forward and deal with LLCs and corporations, and then we also increase the risk. And I'm sure that's why originally the legislation was written such, and our statutes say that there are certain things that you can be involved in and there are certain things that you can't be. And so I think that discussion is more pertinent for today, is what will be the increased risk to ADA as we go ahead and get involved with LLCs, and that just is a...
Sure. Okay, for the record, this is Ted Leonard. In actuality, through the chair to Senator Menard, in actuality, as you mentioned, LLCs and corporations, we actually believe that we will be actually limiting the risk of ADA. As with the private sector, LLCs shield your liability more to the amount that you've invested into the program. But when ADA owns a project, just through owning a project or a portion of a project, we actually are putting up our whole balance sheet backing that. So we believe that, and that's one of the reasons that private investors and project developers use an LLC vehicle or a corporation vehicle, is to actually try to limit their risk to the amount of their investment. So we believe on that section, where it was an ability to modernize ADA's ability to actually protect its assets. When, of course, when the project development legislation was written originally, the LLCs were not even part of Alaska law. So we believe that on that section that it is actually decreasing the risk. Now, on the expansion of the development projects, I mean, yes, we are asking for more tools to be able to have more sections. So, you know, if we're doing more activity, that could raise ADA's risk because we're doing more projects. But we believe with what we did last year, where we stated that we are going to be part of a project, that our goal now is not to own the full project, but being a partner with the private sector in the project, that will make projects better. And as long as we go through the full due diligence for a project, we believe that it's not expanding ADA's risk, but it is giving ADA more tools to help fulfill its mission.
Yeah. Okay. And then just one more.
Senator Menard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And then if we amend, is it AS4488900C, and that, so the roads could be a component too. Would you speak to that? That's
Mark. Oh, Senator Menard, through the chair, this is Mr. Davis for the record. Yes, we there's an issue, a legal issue, about whether ADEC can build a road that does not directly go to a natural resource project or a project that would be expanded under these definitions. So if you look at the DeLong Mountain Transportation Corridor, which is we own at Red Dog, it goes directly from the mine to the port, which is statutorily correct. However, if we were going to build, for example, an industrial road, say, in the Ambler Mining District, that would be a corridor. We would partly fund it, but the actual roads to the mines or the rigs will be built by somebody else, then legally we may not be able to do that. So again, what we're trying to do is kind of expand what we can do, because the models of developing roads have changed. What a lot of states are doing with state infrastructure banks is they're developing the basic industrial road up to an area, and then each company is responsible for getting at the next couple miles out to their own project, which is appropriate. So again, law, we wanted to clarify that. I think they thought we could do it, but they weren't sure. The trouble is, if we issue a bond, bond counsel has to be very sure that we can actually do it. So we sought clarification from the legislature.
Okay, and then a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So it said may, not shall. It said right.
That is correct. Okay. And if I also talk briefly to the risk, when you talk about expanding what we could do, when you the health care, for example, we were approached by the federal government to, again, build with a Native corporation a health care facility in rural Alaska. That kind of project can't be done with conventional financing because it's in a non-conforming area. There's banks don't want to lend out there. If it was leased to the federal government, there's very little risk to ADA. It's a good project. Again, and leasing to the military, again, is of limited risk. So actually some of these projects that we're proposing could be at good rates of return with limited risk.
Okay. Senator Menard, anything further?
Well, just the communication. This would allow you with just speak to that a little bit, because that's.
For the record, Ted Leonard, through the chair to Senator Menard. Communications, for example, could be ADA could be involved in broadband. You know, one of the big projects they're looking with the federal agencies and everyone is being able to bring faster communications up into the rural areas. Mm-hmm. If ADA had this as a sector, we could, for example, invest with a utility in the big towers that would be needed. And again, as long as you're partnering with the utility, the risk is fairly limited, and with the federal government being involved in it, also makes it even more limited. But for right now, and that's the juggling act that ADA has to do, we'd have to somehow tie broadband into, well, that would help a mine with its communications or that type of thing. So we have to try to do this circular activity to say that it's tied to one of the four definitions. And we just would rather it be straight cut that. And one of the things that I'd like to stress in the definition, it has to we have to truly show that it is going to provide an economic development benefit for us to be in that project. So it can't just be that we want to do a hospital. We would have to show a healthcare facility, for example, that it's going to provide 90 jobs, that it's going to provide a economic benefit to the area that that project is going into.
So then as a follow-up, if I may,
I
don't mean to dominate here. I just have it because right now we're very involved in fiber optic in the Mat-Su Borough. So that would be for our school district tying. But so that would not be an economic, you couldn't twist that some way to. That's a bad word. I'm so sorry.
Not twist. Yeah. For the record, through Chair Egan, Senator Menard, if the utilities were involved and we would have to see the project itself to see what type of economic development it was and how it was structured. But this would allow us to be in that sector. Fiber optics and broadband go together.
Yeah. Senator Menard, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, Mr. Davis came for the record, and Senator Menard through the chair. This Monday, we were approached by one of the largest communication companies in the state with a proposal that they can take broadband to a particular area of rural Alaska, but they can't expand it beyond that without some what we would call mezzanine financing, which is what ADA can provide. But it makes sense economically if you're going to go into the area to do the whole project at once. It cuts the cost down measurably. And we told them that until the statute is changed, unfortunately, we just can't discuss that. But if this bill went through, then we next week or whenever it passes, we would engage with that company to see whether there's an economic model where we could provide now broadband to a large part of the state, and then we would be paid back over time.
Okay. Further questions, Senator Menard?
No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions of Mr. Leonard or Mr. Davis? We do have one person signed up to testify from the Fairbanks LIO, Daniel White. Mr. White, are you online?
I am, thank you.
Right, you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Daniel White. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In my role at the UAF, I was charged by Chancellor Brian Rogers to lead the Office of Intellectual Property and Commercialization for the university. One critical element of economic development is moving research and development and technology into the private sector. When UAF licenses technology to the private sector, those businesses gain competitive advantage in the global market. In order for this critical link in economic development to occur, businesses have to have the capability to take advantage of these emerging opportunities. Often this requires capitalization of facilities and equipment. Senate Bill 65 would allow the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to help businesses take advantage of these emerging opportunities. The bill contributes to the university's mission in getting research and development into the private sector and long-term economic development. The bill will benefit small businesses that lead to job growth and economic diversification for the state. And it's on this basis that I support Senate Bill 65.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. White, for taking the time to testify today. And that completes public testimony from OFFNET and from the LIOs, and it is the intent of the chair not to move this out of committee today. It's also going to be the same for Senate Bill 66. So we will hold this piece of legislation. If nothing further, thank you, Mr. Leonard. Thank you, Mr. Davis. And you can stay there and present Senate Bill 66. And just Senator French has joined us in the audience. And just for your information, Senator French, we were going to hold yours to the end. With hopes that Senator Passman can join us. Mr. Leonard, Mr. Davis, Senate Bill 66.
Yes, to the chair. For the record, my name is Ted Leonard, Executive Director of ADA. Senate Bill 66 is a statute that we believe that we would like to introduce in order to help a very successful federal program. The federal program that we're talking about is called the New Markets Tax Credit Program, and this program was designed by the federal government to utilize tax credits in order to spur development by private investors into low-income census tracts. This program allows two type of investors to invest in a program or a project, excuse me. And the two components are a private investor that would invest his money into it, and then also a financial institution that would provide a loan for the project. And the program was designed to allow a project 7 years, in essence, to only actually pay interest on the capital that it's gotten for its project. So in essence, it's to allow the project to gain its legs in order for it to utilize conventional funding. And if it's the chair's desire, I would ask Mark Davis to give a better technical definition of the
And also if we could have a sectional analysis as well, since this is the first time we've heard it.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mark Davis. What this bill does is permit ADA to work with a federal credit tax program that's already in existence from the U.S. Treasury. Right now, ADA has a small guarantee program which would not permit it to make guarantees of loans in conjunction with this federal program. So the essence of 66 is to amend 4488-700 to allow ADA to issue loan guarantees and to make, as a last resort, its own direct loans for the debt side of a new market tax credit deal. The way those things work, essentially, is that investors who have tax liabilities put their own equity, it's usually up to 30%, into the project in a rural area or an area which has high poverty rates. And then the rest is borrowed from a bank. But the bank has to agree to do two things. First, it has to take, as Mr. Leonard said, interest only for 7 years, and has to agree not to foreclose. Well, recently with the credit crunch, banks have been reluctant to make those loans. So the program has stalled in some states, including in this state. Alaska has an allocation of new market tax credits through Alaska Growth Capital, and it also has been in contact with other companies that have those credits. So we did an analysis, and then we talked to those companies that do this type of work, including Alaska Growth Capital. And they recommended that if ADA could guarantee the loan portion of a deal, or if it could issue its own loans, then it would get the program going. So what 700 says is modified is that ADA could guarantee a bank loan in conjunction with a new market tax credit. And these things have a very low default rate. It's a very simple reason. The investors who put their money in directly into the project and who get the tax credits can only take so much of a percentage of a credit, up to 39% over 7 years. If before 7 years has elapsed, the project does not cash flow, then the equity investors owe all their taxes back to the IRS with interest and penalties, which is called a tax capture. So those investors have no interest in having a tax problem. They want to have a tax break. So when they make their analysis of what to invest in, they're usually very careful. So the default rate on new market tax credits products is very low. So essentially, we think by offering guarantees, we would free up the program, but we wouldn't have a great deal of risk. 4488-710 provides that if a guarantee does not create a debt or liability of the state, so again, this would only be on ADA, it would not affect the state government. 4488-715 establishes applicant qualifications, that is, we would reserve the right to guarantee loans or to make loans only to projects we agree with. Just because it qualifies for new market tax credits doesn't mean that we would want to be in the deal. 4488-720 requires an applicant to provide certain information required by ADA, which we would set by regulation, and an economic benefit analysis. Now, you know, all that's not required under the federal law for the tax credits. And we're an economic development agency, so we want to make sure that if we're offering a guarantee or a loan, that it actually creates the economic benefits that we're charged by statute to create. 4488-730 establishes the conditions for loan guarantee, while 740 requires a financial institution holding the guarantee to service the loan. That's to reduce our costs. That means if we guarantee the loan, the bank will still deal with the collection and all the costs, because we're frankly not set up to do that. We're not trying to hire more employees. And 4488-750 allows ADA to leverage the loans. If ADA determines that applicant's not able to obtain a leveraged loan, that means that we could actually make a direct loan. We would probably rarely do that, but if no bank stepped forward, if the new market tax credit seems solid economically, and if it would create a lot of jobs, for example, or if it was in a rural area, then we might sometimes step forward. But that statute just gives us the discretion to do so. We're not required to do so. Then finally, we have a cap under 4488-760 to make sure this program doesn't eat into our reserves. We set a cap of $50 million so that we can continue to our other programs. We don't want this to take over the agency. And then finally, we just have a housekeeping 4488-770, which is the ADA board can adopt appropriate regulations to implement the program. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the analysis.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Questions for Mr. Davis or Mr. Leonard? Senator Menard.
Thank you. And I don't know if you'd want to entertain this at all, but I didn't know why you went with the $50 million, and I didn't know if you would, consider since we're just trying this, at the cap being something like $25 million or $30 million, because there is a chance that you could jeopardize some of the other programs that you're trying to do or some of the other entities. And then the other thing, this tax capture you spoke of, is there a number that the IRS gives to that? I know, you know, like there's 1040s and 1099s, and is there a number that that's a new?
Senator Murata, through the chair, let me take your questions in order, if I might. Okay. We recommended the $50 million limit because, given our current reserves, which are about $350 million, we think we can make that kind of commitment and keep our other programs going. New market tax credits deals tend to be very large. They're complicated. You have a lot of parties. So the minimum is probably $10 million. You're rarely going to see those. These deals are often going to be in the range of $20 to $30 million, which means that we'll probably could do one a year, which is about what we think we should be doing, because it's going to take a lot of work to do one. And we need to analyze it carefully before we do it. So the $50 million is really set at doing one to two a year. That's why we picked that number. And we have the reserves to cover that. The second question you have is, there is no particular section under the code, except this comes under a tax deduction part of the code. This is actually under an IRS circular.
Okay.
And I can get you a copy of that. It's 51 pages long.
No.
Like most IRS circulars, it's meant to be very helpful.
No pun intended.
You need to be a tax lawyer to read it, I think.
Do you have the circular number?
I don't have the circular number. There is a new report, though, put out by the New Markets Tax Credit Coalition, which is a private group, which points out one good thing. Unlike most federal programs, which have been criticized for the cost per job, the average cost per job of the federal government of every new job cost is $12,000 per job with using these tax credits, which is about the lowest of all tax and job incentive programs in the United States.
And were there questions of you two? Mr. Leonard, Mr. Davis, thank you very much for presenting the bill.
Thank you.
Senator Menard, don't leave
yet. Mr. Chairman, I didn't know if that was a yes, you would entertain lowering that from the 50 to 30.
Or 25.
I'll refer to the director.
Through the chair to Senator Menard, we believe the 50 is appropriate, but if it was going to go down, I would say that $30 million would probably be the lowest it could go and still be a viable program.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Leonard. I thought you were going to try to up it for a bridge or something. Okay, thank you, Mr. Leonard, Mr. Davis, and we will see you again shortly. Now, to go back to Senate Bill 87, Senator French and Mr. Woodrow, if you'd like to come forward, please. And hopefully we will try to get this out of the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. With me is Mr. Andy Motoro from my office, the staffer assigned to help push this bill along. I know you've had a hearing on the bill. I'm here to answer any questions you or other members of the committee may have.
Great. Thank you, Senator French. And so if you'd like to just stay in the audience, then we do have some people that have signed up to testify.
That's wonderful. Thank
and
you, Mr. Chairman.
Just stick around to answer
we'll
questions.
We'll be in the room. Yes, sir.
Great. We'll be appreciative. Thank you very much. First person in the gallery signed up to testify, Bob Dahl again. Mr. Dahl, if you can come forward, please. Your name and affiliation for the record again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Dahl. I'm the president of the Retired Public Employees of Alaska, RPEA. And I'm here on behalf of RPEA to speak in support of Senate Bill 87. And I'm happy once again to be addressing some of our future members. The last time I appeared before the committee on Tuesday of this week, I had the opportunity to present some survey data, which I hoped would be helpful to the committee, and offer a suggestion for a financial solution to the dilemma of unfunded obligations left to this legislature by its predecessors. Today, my message to the committee is more simple and straightforward. My appeal is for simple equity. Decades ago, the state of Alaska opted to shift its retiree health care burden to Medicare when the retiree reached 65. Retirees did not object, and I don't think they object now. But the federal government has resisted the establishment of a variable rate for various states, envisioning, I would imagine, a quagmire of appeals and rulings as economic circumstances changed in each state. The result here has been that healthcare providers in Alaska locations, particularly in Anchorage and Fairbanks, have turned away Medicare patients citing inadequate reimbursement rates. It's a tragedy for all Medicare eligibles, including public employee retirees. From the viewpoint of pure economics, we now have a situation where a state or municipal retiree may not be able to find medical care in two of Alaska's major population centers. For any retiree who requires medical attention on a regular basis, the predictable reaction is for the over 65 person to move out of the state where doctors will serve his medical requirements. If he or she chooses to do so, the state and our municipalities lose all of the economic benefit that should flow from having that person as a resident. And I dare say that the members of the Senate are familiar with the Alaska Commission on Aging and ICER reports that indicate what the value of having those retirees in-state can be. The retiree continues to receive a retirement paycheck, but spends it elsewhere. That's not a logical objective for Alaska, and the bill gives us a chance to correct it. For the record, let me say that approximately one-third of RPEA members live out of state. That's not a number that we're anxious to increase. But I said that I was going to focus on equity, and imagine that you have completed 30 years of public service in Alaska, and you paid into your retirement fund every month, and you've made a deal, you believe, and kept your end of the bargain. But on your 65th birthday, you find that overnight, primary medical care is no longer available for reasons which have nothing to do with any of the participants, the state or the individual, what have you. It seems to our members like a deception. They have enjoyed medical insurance coverage since they retired, but when they reach 65, they suddenly find that it's no longer available, and the state severs its connection with them for this purpose. With no apparent further concern. No one has planned it that way, but the sense of deception persists. But there's a solution. The congressional delegation has done its part in convincing the Congress to make an exception to the normal Medicare rules. The state may legally overcome the reimbursement rate gap. Senate Bill 87 is a vehicle to both fulfill Medicare eligible expectations and to keep retirees in our state. RPEA urges its adoption by the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Questions for Mr. Dahl? Bob, thank you very much for taking the time again to testify. I'm sorry, Senator Davis.
The question is not pertaining to the bill. I guess I'm confused and don't know that once you're 65, you automatically come off and you have to use only Medicare. You can't go back and use the retirement plan at all? Up to the age of 65, you can.
Through the chair, for Senator Davis, yes, that's correct. That's exactly the
way it is now.
Yes, ma'am.
Once you're 65, you're no longer covered under the retirement plan for the state.
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions for Mr. Dahl? Great, thank you, Mr. Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next to testify, Marie Darlin. Mr. Darlin, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, please. You're used to this.
My name is Marie Darlin, and I'm representing AARP and their Capital City Task Force. You have a letter of support here for this bill from us, and I might say I will not repeat everything that Bob Dahl said, because we would have all the same issues, and the fact that even with your state health insurance, when you hit 65, Medicare becomes first provider. And unless you have that, the rest of it's not worth anything. And I can say from a federal retiree viewpoint, the same thing applies. So that's where it becomes a problem, when you no longer can have Medicare first because the doctors are not accepting any patients who then become 65 and go on Medicare first. And that's where the problem lies. So, and as Bob says too, we want to keep our seniors here. This is one way to do it, is to be sure that they do have access to primary care doctors so that then the rest of their insurance is also there too. And so other than that, I don't have anything to add other than our support.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Darling. Questions from Marie? Great. Thank you again for coming over and testifying again. Hopefully this is the last version. We also have John Sherwood in the audience from Department of Health and Social Services. He's here and available to answer any questions that the committee may have. You're kidding me. Seeing none. That completes public testimony. And are we ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move Senate Bill number 87 from this committee to the next committee with a referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Pascvan. Is there objection? Congratulations, Mr. French.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy. We'll take a brief at ease. Signed all documents and nothing else to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 2:42.
All right.